Former swimmers looking for a way to give back to the sport in New York City? Reach out to Imagine Swimming. Since 2002, they've been the premier learn-to-swim school with international and American staff, including Olympic champions Anthony Irvin and Eric Vent. Imagine Swimming offers infant to adult classes, plus competitive team options, water polo, and an artistic swimming club coached by an Olympic silver medalist. With flagship locations across Manhattan and Brooklyn, Imagine is always looking for the next generation of swimmers to pass on their knowledge and passion for swimming. We individualize training in the pool, so why not individualize your nutrition? Erica Biney of Biney Wellness Building will help you and your swimmers get exactly what each athlete needs through genetic testing and personalized nutrition plans. So stop guessing what you should and shouldn't be putting into your body. Athletes within a few weeks have noticed they're recovering faster because they're fueling their body with what they need and staying away from what their body hates. Erica understands swimming. She gets it. She's worked with over 20 Olympians, including the fastest man in the world, Caleb Dressel. Group discounts are available, so go to Biney Wellness Building and get in touch with Erica today. That's Biney, B-E-I-N-E, wellnessbuilding.net. All right, we're on. Claire Crozan, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for joining me. I appreciate this. I was chatting with your dad over in Doha. I was over in Doha watching you compete, and I went out for sushi one day, and your dad had sent me a message and said, Claire loves sushi, and I'm going to take her out. Did you end up going to sushi after you swam all those events?
I did, actually. It was really, really good sushi as well, so that was a very fun treat.
Nice. And then I told him he's got to let you go shopping. So you got some shopping in over there too?
Yeah, lots of good shopping. They have great malls there. Lots of designer stores. That's not very common where I'm from. So I kind of got to play around in those, which was definitely kind of scary at first, but it was really fun. And I ended up getting my first big girl purchase at Prada. Mm. So
nice.
Definitely made a dent in the bank account, but that's okay.
Yeah, well, it was well-deserved, well-earned as well. And we'll go into that in a sec. But I wanted to start with this. I was doing some research on you and clearly have been a swimmer all your life, but not only just a swimmer, kind of a prodigy, you know, someone that was naturally gifted from a very young age, even the age of three. My question with that is, how do you go from somebody that has enormous potential to somebody that actually fulfills their potential and goes on to win world championships and Olympic games and things like that? How do you go from a prodigy to a success? Give us the answer on that one.
I wish I had a very clear answer for you. I think that's kind of just a loaded question, but I've definitely had a lot of support in my journey. I think it helps that I had a lot of success as a young kid. So like new opportunities have opened to me, and I've gotten to compete and train with two like Division I colleges, which is pretty rare, and both very, very accomplished teams. But I mean, it definitely takes a village. Like if it wasn't for my parents driving me to practice every day, even when I was 11 up to when I was 16 and actually like doing things, I don't think I would have gotten to where I am. But I mean, the best, I guess, most accessible advice I can give is just to keep working hard. I think there's a lot of times when, you know, you're in between big meets, and swimming's hard because as like basketball, they have like lots and lots of games, baseball, lots and lots of games, but swimming, there's only really two big meets every year. So just trying to trust the process, definitely trust your coaches. And I've had a lot of great coaches and lots of great instruction. So I think I've been lucky for that.
Yeah, for sure. You have. I think a lot of us can relate to that. The people that get to, you know, the top level, there's a lot of people around us and a lot of people doing some incredible things for us, for sure. In terms of some of the disappointments that you've had along the way, how did you deal with those? Obviously, if you're that good at that young, and you know, you end up making the Olympic team at a young age, there are some disappointments along the way. So how did you deal any time that you had a setback?
Yeah, I think that's honestly been the most fun part of my journey. Obviously not in the moment. I would say one of the bigger standouts of like a disappointment was I didn't make the world championship team last year for Fukuoka. So It was definitely hard because I went from that high of making an Olympic team at a young age, then making another world championship team in a lot of events. I think I competed for individual events in Budapest. So just a lot of success, but and then obviously a letdown. But I think, honestly, it's just made me more appreciative of the process. Just trying to make sure I'm enjoying the journey just as much as you enjoy these results. And then also, I think, obviously, there's like a saying, or you learn a lot more from your failures than you do from your successes. And that's definitely true. Just learning more about my body as I'm growing up and how different training styles work better or worse for me. So I think I've started to take a lot of ownership of my swimming journey, like as a result of maybe facing some disappointments. So I think that's been a very empowering experience. And I think it's been helping me like even now, because I know what I need and I know how to get it and how to ask for it.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. I'm going to go full screen next time I ask you a question too. So don't be surprised if I disappear for a second. I'm still here listening, but
yeah, no worries.
I'm going to get into some swimming questions a little bit. You're world class in three different styles, so backstroke, fly, and free. So give us three things on each stroke that you think you need in order to be elite, or have helped you get to the place where you are. Just three things on backstroke, three things on butterfly, and three things on free, maybe that you concentrate on in order to be really good in those separate strokes. Tell me.
Yeah. So honestly, right off the bat, I think I could knock out two for each stroke because, especially with Todd's training style here at UVA, like they're, it's such a focus, but underwaters and kicking.
Right.
Like before I would do kick sets and I worked a lot of underwaters, but it's like huge here. And I've never done like this intense training, like for those specific things in a race. But the more I do it, the more it makes sense, because I would say my style of swimming is very kick driven. I've never really been the best at pulling. So a lot of my power and a lot of my speed comes from my kick, and that's like how I get so high on top of the water. So I think for both of those, just making sure that you have that kick endurance and you have that kick speed, super huge. Right. For backstroke, I would say I've been working a lot on like balancing out my backstroke. I think Todd and I worked with Ken a little bit, and they figured out that one of my arms was a lot stronger than the other, so it left me kind of unbalanced. So just making sure I'm catching evenly and in line with both hands has been a big focus in my training, especially in long course because the pool is very long. For fly, I would say we've been working a lot on just like speed and quickness, so getting used to and really getting like cemented my kick count and stroke count for that first 50 of the 100, because I just have to race. Because I think if you're able to nail that turn and then have a great like underwater, then you can carry a lot of speed, which will help on the back half. And then for freestyle, honestly, it's still been a work in progress. We've done more of that testing and they've kind of figured out that, again, I'm a little unbalanced in my freestyle, whether that's just because of like, I'm a right-handed person, so maybe that's why, but just kind of looking more into that. And then obviously like the kicking and the underwater works has helped with all of the strokes, especially in short course. It's such a big part of the race, but I've even been feeling it in long course too. Just making sure I'm carrying that speed through the wall. And then it's just helped me have better breakouts and be able to carry my speed better.
I'm glad you brought up the difference between short course and long course, because that was kind of my next question. But before we get there, is there a difference for you in the way that you have to kick when you're on your front or you're on your back? Because most people aren't really good at both. They're either good on their front or good on their back, but you seem to be getting it down where you're really effective on both sides. So is there any particular thing that you're doing each side to be good at it?
I would say naturally I'm very comfortable with doing like underwater dolphin kicks on my back. I think that's where I'm fastest. But lately Todd has been correcting, normally my streamline, I have a very tight streamline, so my arms go behind my head and like behind my ears. But he's said to try to put them more in line with my ears, so it's obviously more like hydrodynamic or whatever that word is. And then also for like dolphin kicking on my stomach, naturally I undulate more like in the front. So I'll use my hands and my arms a little bit. So I've been trying to work more on keeping like a flatter front half while still like using my, my abs and my legs to like propel me forward. So it's just trying to pick up little tenths and hundredths here and there. But I think those have been like the biggest changes for my front. And then obviously just working on strength and resistance with like socks and something to help both the underwaters on your front and on your back.
Yeah, I was going to say that, you know, you said you do a lot of kick sets. It's not just kind of, you know, doing kick while you're swimming, but it's basically specific work as well. So in terms of the specificity of the kicking, you just mentioned socks and some other, and I imagine you do a lot of, you know, pulley work, maybe some with some bands or maybe some with some, even some parachute work or some bucket work, right? You incorporate all those things?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. How often would you be putting an emphasis on that? Like, are you guys doing that every day where you're doing some kick work, some resistant kick work, some speed kick, or are you doing it kind of three times a week or something?
I would say every day has some element of like kicking in it, whether that's just like warming up your legs before the main set. And sometimes they will incorporate just like socks, kick out work before like a 200 backstroke kind of set. And most of it's pretty easy too, because I do a lot of underwaters in my races. So if they're like, okay, here's like six blasts, like in your kick out plus like six strokes or whatever, like I'm obviously doing a lot more underwater. So that could be considered underwater work. But then I would say probably three or four practices a week, like is a very like resistance heavy, kick heavy set. And whether that's just on, we use power racks a lot instead of buckets, but there's like specific sets for power racks where you're just doing underwaters. And then in a lot of my butterfly workouts, there'll be 25s with socks underwater and backstroke too lately. It's kind of feels like waterboarding, but I know it'll help me because breath control is very, very huge for underwaters, especially when you're doing that many. So yeah.
Waterboarding, that's a good way to put it. It does feel like that sometimes. It does. Like, come on, man, let me breathe. In terms of that, are you strict with a kick count in practice, or is Todd strict with it in terms of if you're doing 200 work, you have a specific, if you're doing 100 work or 50 work, do you have specific kick counts for the type of work that you're doing in practice?
Yeah, I always do. And I've always had them because it is such a key part of my racing. But 200 is obviously a little bit less than 100, but you try to stick to that higher end just because you know it's going to obviously be a little harder during race day. But like for hundreds, I'll do like up to 12 or like 11-ish typically. And then 200s, it's more like 8 or 9.
Wow. This goes back to part of what I think it takes to be, you know, to go from somebody that has extreme amount of potential to someone who is an Olympic medalist like yourself. I think it takes discipline. And it comes down to, like you just said, you have certain kick counts that you know are important for each of the different distances. And it's not really on Todd to hold you accountable to that. And I think this is where the separation comes with a lot of people. You know, if you're doing a 200 backstroke set, for instance, and your kick count is, let's say, 10 off each wall, you're the one holding yourself accountable to that. And that's the discipline it takes to be, you know, go from good to great. So I don't think you give yourself enough credit for kind of the mental discipline it takes to hold yourself accountable in sets like that, right?
Yeah, thank you, though. It definitely is a big focus of mine to try to go in every day and give it my best and go out knowing that, you know, I put in the work that I needed to for race day. That definitely is huge.
That's a separator. All right, let's go back to this question then. So the difference between short course yards and long course is fairly immense. And for someone that's a great underwater kicker, it must be a difficult transition to go, you know, from training that to then performing long course. And long course is a different animal. So how have you dealt with the transition from being comfortable short course yards to being uncomfortable long course meters and having to improve your swim speed as well?
Honestly, I think the older I've gotten, the more I've appreciated long course. Sometimes It's like during short course season and Todd's giving you all these sets with underwaters and you're like, I just need more time to breathe, Todd. But the more I've gotten older, the more I've enjoyed training long course. I think my backstroke is more of a sweet spot in long course because it just feels good to train it. I don't know why. But definitely at the beginning of long course season, everyone feels it. Todd's like, okay, it's our first practice back. And everyone kind of groans because you just know that that pool is long. And it's a big adjustment period, but it always is good because you know you're going to need it for the end of the season. And honestly, I kind of like that the U.S. has like a different, like half of the year short course, half the year is long course. I think it keeps it interesting. And I don't know. I kind of like the variety that it brings, and you can still go back to short course practices sometime during long course season to do power racks or really focus on speed. But then you're able to get into those really like long aerobic sets long course because it's long and you can just really crank out the yardage.
Yeah, I was going to say that in terms of the speed and power, it's easy to develop speed and power short course yards because you can just do really short distances, a lot of resistance, things like that. How do you maintain or manage or even develop your speed and your power when it comes to the long course racing? Are you doing more of just free speed swimming type stuff, or are you still adding in a lot of resistance work to your training?
So even today, yeah, we still do add in a lot of resistance. Even today we were using socks. So it was more of a 100 freestyle practice this morning. So we'll use socks and like just do kick out and breakout work. And then sometimes we'll also use like chutes, different varying sizes, and just do like a couple strokes. So you can still kind of get that speed that you need, but honestly for long course, it's more important to practice sustaining that speed. Cause you obviously kick out and then you still got a whole 50 to go pretty much. So I think it's more focused around being powerful and explosive when you first start swimming and then also being able to hold that. So I think it's kind of a mix, but it's more important to like work on sustaining that long course.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about the 50 freestyle because you're so close to breaking the 24 mark. But then when I looked at your other times as well, it's like you're so close in the 100 fly to breaking 56, and then you're so close in the 100 back to breaking 58. So it's like you're right on the cusp of having these massive breakthroughs in all these events. How do you focus on what you train for? Like how do you know when you're going to swim backstroke one day, fly one day, free one day? How do you balance it all out?
That's actually been kind of fun this season, figuring that out with Todd. Just because like at the beginning of the season, I never knew what to expect. Todd would literally have to send me like weekly plans so I would know what I was doing every day, because otherwise I would be like, I don't know. But it definitely has been a bit of a dance, a bit of an art form, because it's hard training three different strokes, but also like kind of three different disciplines. Because I would say for backstroke, I tend to try to be more like aerobic for that 200, but then also in like fly and free, I'm trying to do the 100 and maybe even the 50 if you're going to worlds. So I would say it's pretty balanced, like as close to 50-50 as you can get with like a 9 practice a week schedule. I've been doing a lot of aerobic, like more than I did in club. So I'll do a lot of aerobic freestyle days, about one or two a week. So my Mondays will be 200 freestyle in the afternoon. My Tuesdays will be like what we call red set, which has been very difficult for me. It's like really more for the 4AMers, 500 freestylers, but then Tom just puts me in it for the 200 backstroke. So I've been struggling my way through that. But and then
why also, is it called red set in particular?
So it's really based upon like different colors. So like white is like slow, pink is like kind of fast, red is like threshold effort or whatever. But I mean, lately the coaches have been like, it's literally red set, Claire, because you turn beet red. And I'm like, I know, it's so hard. Because Blair coaches that practice and she writes some pretty nasty sets, and it's just basically swimming for an hour and a half straight with like zero rest. But then after you get through that day, it's like 200 backstroke practices, which I enjoy. And then there's always a consistent 3 day a week where you're doing speed. So whether that's with socks or with racks, there's always like a double that you have like strictly power, which is nice.
So you'd kind of be bouncing around from group to group a little bit, wouldn't you? You'd go from predominantly a sprint group to maybe a mid group to even a higher end group on that red day. So you're kind of getting it all in 1 week where you get a taste of everything, right?
Yeah, I kind of am my own group. I bounce between coaches and I enjoy it. I like the variety. It keeps it interesting. And I've always kind of trained that way. So it's all I know. Yeah.
That's good. Is there a day that you like the most? Maybe a day where you feel like, okay, today I'm going to come in and really dominate. Is that on a speed day or is it what other day would it be?
I would say speed days are pretty good. I've been getting a lot better at power racks. I used to not be able to pull that much weight, but now I'm getting up there. And then I would say 200 backstroke though, long course, I'm most comfortable. I'm starting to like challenge some of the boys now and they'll all get a little bit nervous being next to me, but I think it's really fun. And I always know that those days are going to be like a good work day.
That's a good point about the power rack. I found that sometimes the power rack itself can be a little bit intimidating for women. So sounds like you've mastered it a little bit now. How what's the difference for you in terms of where you started to where you are now in terms of your growth on the power rack?
I think a lot of it's come from strength. I didn't do a whole lot of lifting heavy and like college and Olympic lifts before I came just to college or to Virginia even. So I've been getting a lot stronger in that regard. And then a big focus of Todd's in the beginning of the season is working on efficiency. So he'll put you on a power rack, but he'll limit you to 8 strokes. So you have to pull as much weight as you can, but with not a lot of strokes. And then as the season progresses, he'll like let go of the stroke limit. So you're now able to take more strokes, but you're used to being more efficient. So I think that in and of itself like helps me because I kind of figured out how to pull more water. And then once you figure that out, then you can pull more weight.
Right. Yeah. Got it. Let me ask you this. You probably answered this a few times before, but why did you decide to redshirt this year and just focus on the Olympics?
So I knew that I wanted to like make a real go of the Olympics. I wanted to not have like any regrets. So, you know, it's a kind of a perfect time in my life. I can always go back to my degree, but I knew like this is the year that I want to just go all in, like really focus. And then it actually kind of parlayed nicely because I did end up transferring from Stanford to UVA. Mm-hmm. So just a part of NCAA transfer rules in the US, I wasn't technically eligible to compete this year. Mm-hmm. So yes, it's unfortunate I wasn't able to compete like in the college circuit, but also I think I was planning on not doing that anyway, just to focus on long course, be able to have the flexibility to go to different like pro series long course meets and to that unusual worlds in February in Doha. So that made my schedule a little less booked. I didn't have to like worry about tapering for NCAAs. And then I could just really focus on long course now and make a go of however many events I could hopefully qualify in.
Yeah. Was it difficult to watch the girls that you train with now to watch them at NCAAs and have the success they had? They were killing it, weren't they?
Yeah, they were doing really, really well. So yeah. It was bittersweet, but also it was kind of fun to be a spectator for once because I was like training alongside them every day this year and they all worked really, really hard. And so definitely well-deserved. And it just honestly makes me more excited for next year when I finally get to be with them and compete with them at ACCs and NCAAs. So I'm excited, but hats off to them this year. They did a really great job.
Yeah. I mean, Gretchen set the world on fire. She was phenomenal. Is it tough to be teammates with someone like that, but also competitors now? Like she's going to have to transfer that to long course. There's a little bit of pressure on her now because she swam so fast short course. She's got a lot to prove long course, but she does a lot of the same events you do, right?
Yeah, we do share a couple events overlap in fly and free, but it's honestly exciting because she is so world-class in so many things. So if I'm up there training with her every day, then I'm training with literally one of the best swimmers in the world. So it could only make you better. And I think we both challenge each other in different ways, but it's been really fun, especially with Kate and Alex too. And so many other girls on the team. Like I'm kind of like, you know, busting my butt every day because I'm next to one of them pretty much every day of the week. And so I know I'm putting in good work and they're also putting in good work. So it's been nice to have just different girls to train with and really be held accountable.
Yeah. And I guess it's nice to have gone through an Olympic trials experience at a young age and come out the other end successful. So what did you learn from that experience the first time around that you're taking into this experience now, 3 years later?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say for right now, I'm just trying to match the energy and excitement I had going into it. I would say almost going to Olympic trials that young and making it's a bit of a double-edged sword. I now know what to expect, which is really good. But then I also now know the pressure that is kind of exists during that meet, especially in the U.S. So I would say I've gotten a lot better at just keeping it clinical and trying to take more of the emotion out of it because it's just a swim meet. Like it would be awesome to make the Olympic team again and it would be heartbreaking to not, but it's, you know, the pool is still the same distance. It's still the same event. So just, you know, taking the knowledge that I have from last year and like knowing that it will be a big media circus, but it's also okay. It's just a swim meet.
I really like that word clinical. That's a good word. it kind of conjures up a lot of, you know, thoughts for me when I think of that. So in terms of just, you know, you said take the emotion out of it, but what does it mean clinical? Like for those that don't have the awareness and understanding that you have, maybe some young girls that are going into their Olympic trials for the first time listening to this, what does that mean clinical?
It's more, I would say I have developed a habit of like putting a lot of pressure on myself, which understandable because you work so hard for these goals that you want to achieve them. And I think a certain amount of pressure and expectations on yourself does hold you to that discipline that we talked about earlier. But then also I would say in a meet as big as that, like you've put in all of the hard work, you've swam probably thousands of miles or whatever. So just more trying to take the expectations off and just having fun and knowing that you have a schedule. At least I have a very pretty like regulated schedule of, you know, wake up, swim prelims, go back to the hotel, nap, do whatever I need to do to recover. And then just do my warm up and swim my race and not have it mean more than that. And not letting those expectations, you know, make me nervous or make me waste energy before I even swim. So just trying to really put my best foot forward on race day and know that I'm going to be good.
Yeah, you'll be good. There's no doubt about that. You've had tremendous success and now you've got experience, you know, across the board, even going to Doha. Well, let's go back to Doha for a second where you kind of did the clean sweep in the backstrokes, the 50, 100, 200. Was there a feeling for you going into that meet that something special was going to happen or did it kind of just unfold as the meet went on?
I mean, I was definitely really excited for that meet. Todd, so we didn't really taper that much. We kind of were doubling and lifting right up until the day we left. And then once we got there, that was like when our quote unquote taper started. So we just singled before the meet. But I had been going faster than ever in practice and I was really, really excited for the meet. Todd was really excited for the meet. And I know that we had established before I left, like, you know, if we went best times at this meet, that would be like wonderful. Like that's like best meet hands down. Like couldn't have asked for anything better. If we were close to them, like, you know, that would be great. And then obviously we would want to stick between those two like possibilities. But then I think once I did the 100 back and, I would say I was more favored to win. Obviously, like Kaylee and Reagan weren't there. But, you know, once I did that, I was really happy with the time, really happy with how it felt. I think I was adjusting to the new time schedule, like as the meet went on. So I'd say like after I did that, I was like, that felt really good. I would say after the 50 back is when I was like, wait, this is like actually pretty cool because I like before that meet, I couldn't even remember the last time I did a 50 backstroke, like in a race. So that was very surprising for me that I went as fast as I did. And then obviously the 200, I would say, is more of my baby in like a backstroke sense. So I was just excited for that one because I really enjoy the 200 backstroke. And I would say there's still a lot of left, like room for improvement left for me, just in terms of times. And I have big goals for that event.
Tired of settling for less than the best with your team's dry land program? Swim Strong Dryland is the answer you've been looking for. With world-class dry land programming for every age group, customized to fit your team's needs, nutritional coaching and education centered on the latest evidence-based research, leadership training and character development to promote an athlete-driven culture, sports psychology education and mental skills training, coaches' corners to promote collaboration, data-driven performance analysis, and an unrivaled family of athletes, coaches, and teams, fast swimming starts here.
Hey guys, I've been trialing some revolutionary new swim tech, and now you can get your hands on it too. This is EO Swim Better, a swimming evolution in the palm of your hand. Improve your technique with EO Swim Better.
Analyze your stroke technique with EO's Swim Better handset. Go to eolab.com, use code Brett at checkout and save 10%.
How would you feel about 50s of stroke being in the Olympics? I know everyone's got their own opinion on it. What's your thoughts on it?
I mean, I think it would be great. Like, I it would help me because I do love swimming the 50s, but I think it's super fun. It would be fun to watch. It's just a splash and dash. So I think they should be included.
Yeah, I do too. I'm also of the belief, and I could be wrong. I'm okay if people disagree, but I'm of the belief that, well, first of all, if the 50s were in the Olympics, I think we'd see specialists. I think we'd see specialist sprinters and maybe even 100 swimmers and then separate 200 swimmers. I think you'd start to see separation in the world. If you put an Olympic gold medal on it, people are really going to focus on just swimming a fast 50 backstroke. Do you agree with that or disagree?
I agree and disagree. I think there would be a lot of specialists in the 50s, but then also 50s are kind of a crapshoot, for a bad term for it. Like, you could have one little mistake and it would, you know, you would get eighth. So I think it would obviously be very fun to specialize in the 50. That would be a great little training regimen. But I think it probably would be better if you focused on both the 50 and the 100. And then it would probably be rare for someone who does a 200 to go all the way down to the 50. But I think it would be fun, and it would probably give more longevity to the sport, since, you know, the older you get, the harder it is to do a 200 or even 100 for that matter. 100's hurt for me right now, but I think it would be fun.
How dare you say crapshoot? Oh, you stabbed me in the heart with the crapshoot. What are you talking about, a crapshoot? Here's why I disagree with the crapshoot, right? I don't believe in the one mistake type situation. I think that you train for excellence, and you repeat excellence in practice so that you get to a point where things become automatic and mistakes are very few and far between. I think if you were to make a mistake in a 50, it would be because of pressure ultimately. Yeah. I don't think it would be because of your training. So, like, I think the best athletes in the world in sprints train to be as consistent and as on point as they can. So I don't think it's a crapshoot at all. I think the best athlete wins ultimately. And you were the best athlete. So
thank you. A good real life example would be Sarah Soystrom. I swear every time she gets in for that 50 fly, she breaks the world record. But yeah, you probably would figure it out. But, you know, barring unforeseen circumstances like sickness or something else, like, I could see how you could definitely train and really work for that 50.
Yeah. Now tell me this, you're got some decisions to make, I guess, in terms of events at Olympic trials. Have you made those decisions yet?
Nothing final yet, but when they added that extra day for like the 8-day format to the 9-day format, I think it only helped me. The way that my like event schedule will be set out is pretty sweet. If I were to do the 100 free, I think that would be the only conflict with the 100 back one day. But aside from that, everything else gets its own day, which is wonderful. And I would say I've very well prepared and trained for doing a long meet like that. So, I mean, I'm excited. I would like to swim as many events as I could, but it's probably up to Todd to really look at it and let me know his thoughts, and then I'll probably just decide.
So, all right, let me just throw them out there then. So I'm guessing 100 back, 100 fly, 100 free, 50 free, 200 back. Is this something I'm missing?
No, that's it.
That's it so far. Yeah. That's still a heavy program because you got the prelims, the semis, and the finals. So you're doing three of all of those. So that's a massive program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We might have to narrow it down just to three events, but I would say I train for all five, and we'll see how I'm looking up and towards that meet. Right. What's looking the best and what will be give me the best shot.
Cool. So what have you got coming up between now and trials?
So I'm leaving next week for San Antonio Pro Series down in Texas, which will be fun. I'm sure a lot of people will be there. It's kind of the last, like, not the last, but one of the last, like, big, like, official meets before Olympic trials. And then I'm pretty sure Virginia will be going to, like, a little NCAP invitational meet, like, late May as, like, a tune-up to see how we all look. And then, obviously, Olympic trials in mid-June.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Now, when you're in season, what's your thought process? Are you trying to get as close as you can to your best time? Like, do you try and swim as fast as possible in season, or are you happy kind of being beat up and understanding that you're not going to be near your best? Like, how do you kind of mentally prepare for the way that you swim in season?
That mindset definitely has had to change for me. As a kid, I could just get in the water and drop time every time. But especially this year with like the bigger, I have never lifted 4 days a week before, but this year I have. And lifting really takes a toll on you. So I've had to get used to knowing that, you know, I am tired right now. Like practice has been brutal. Lift has been brutal. And that's okay because none of my races when I'm tapered will be as painful as what I'm doing right now. Right. And, you know, you have to find kind of joy in the process. So just you race because you love it, not because you're trying to go best time really. So just trying your best. And then hopefully you'll be close. And if you're close while you're tired, then that's great, because when you aren't tired, then that could only mean really, really good things, that you'll drop a lot of time. So, I would say just trying to keep everything in perspective has been a big learning curve for me this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask you about your coach, Todd DeSorbo. He's just phenomenal, and he's just crushing it. Like he's killing everybody, especially on the women's side of things. So in terms of, you know, just some insights there, like what makes him great for you? And what have you noticed that is really separating him from everybody else right now?
So I would say the two big things about Todd that's kind of unlike any coach I've ever trained under before is he brings so much excitement and just energy to the pool deck, which helps because swimming is a very, very hard sport. So if you have a coach there who is like inspiring you, encouraging you, and like makes you want to swim fast, then that only helps the practice environment, especially when you're doing tough sets. So having him there to just like, and all the coaches have parlayed this very well of just keeping the energy and excitement level up on deck has been very, very fun. And then I would say Todd and the coaching staff at Virginia in general have been very, I would say kind of the first of like the first of any coach really to start incorporating more data analytics and math into the sport. So he has Ken Ono, who is a mathematician here at UVA, studying different swimmers, which I think helps because you're able to find those nuanced inefficiencies in strokes, which you couldn't really see with the naked eye. And I think the combination of those two things has made swimming faster and more efficient because your stroke is as perfect, as close to perfect as you can get, like with your body limitations. And then you just have that energy on pool deck that makes you want to swim fast, and fast practicing makes fast racing. So
yeah, he's awesome. He's killing. He's doing a brilliant job, I'll tell you that. And yeah, wow. And it'd be pretty cool to have him as the head coach of the of the Olympic team too. If you get, if a bunch of you girls make it, to have your coach there, that'd be cool too.
That would be really awesome. I actually did train with him because he was an assistant coach at the 2021 Olympics. So I'd actually be my second team with him, which would be really cool.
Awesome. Now, listen, I got to bring it up. I just have to as an Aussie. There's rivalry, right? And there's competition. I mean, there's a lot of talk about how great the Aussies are at the 4x1, especially on the freestyle side. You're a contender for that relay. Like, is there talk amongst the American women about, you know, being competitive and wanting to take the Aussies down in that? Like, come on. Like, there's got to be some talk, right?
There definitely is talk, but I would say it's more just fuel to the fire because the Australians are so dominant in that event. It makes us and kind of puts a fire under our butts to get better because I would say the U.S., when we it comes to into sports, have a lot of national pride. So whether that's basketball, football, soccer, and swimming, we want to obviously be competitive for that gold medal. So I would say, if anything, they're just inspiring us to get better. And I think it's been working because I would say a lot of American women this year have been going faster than ever before. Yeah. Like to think about it, like not that long ago, it was like lucky if one person could go 52 and now everyone's trying to like, you could have full relays, like almost going 51s, which is insane. Right. Yeah. So I would say it just keeps the level of competition high. And I think it's good for other countries to just battle each other because it's what makes sports fun.
Yeah. I'd imagine that's one you definitely want to be on, hey?
Mm-hmm. That'll be fun to watch this summer.
Yeah, there's going to be some fireworks in the pool. There's just so many great athletes right now. I think swimming is so deep, but especially on the women's side, there's just so many great women competing right now. It's just across the board, and they're from all different countries. So I think it's going to be really deep, really competitive, and super fast this summer for sure.
I know. I'm excited, honestly, for some of the Olympic trials coming up because I would say a lot of world records start to fall at those kinds of meets. So I think it'll be cool to see what events kind of get taken down and if that'll be repeated at the Olympics.
What about you? Do you think about world records at all? Are you aiming for that type of thing?
Obviously, it's a big goal, but I would say I try to focus more on my personal goals. And then if that also happens to be a world record, that would be awesome. But I'm trying to take baby steps and, you know, we'll see.
Well, listen, you're killing it. You're fantastic. And you've had such a great run.
Oh, thank you.
Since the disappointment, you said, you know, you came back stronger. So hopefully it continues into Olympic trials and then into Olympics. And good luck with everything. Okay.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate your time today. Thanks, Claire.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, bye.